This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, Monday, October
18th, 2010. GPSA business meeting, October
18th, 2009. All right, everyone, and welcome to the October 18th, 2010 GPSA business meeting, the second business meeting of the semester. We're going to get started, so if you could take a seat. We got a full agenda today. So I am Preston Mansfield. I am the president of the GPSA, in case anyone here does not know me yet. And we're going to start off with just what the agenda is. And so the first item on the agenda is the welcome and introduction. And we're just going to go through a verbal roll call to see who's here of the voting members. And then anyone who is a non-voting member will introduce themselves. So first up is Rhonda. Kyle. Steven. Tom here. Nicole. Grom. Chris C. Evan. Billy. Bobby is absent. What? Billy, yeah. Ben?
I'm here, but I don't know what a voting council is.
Where's voting council? Oi. I should say members, but anyway. Chris H?
Ooh, that's blinding.
You have Jenny? Not here yet. Neat? Yep, Jenny's here, all right. I'm here. Asha?
Yep.
Siska? Jen? And
none.
What?
Yeah.
None?
Nantogba.
Sorry, I've always... It's just the bottle is always throwing me up. Nantogba. Nantogba. All right. Thank you. So, that is here. And anyone who is not already accounted for, if you could just introduce yourself. So we'll start off with Brian.
I'm Brian. I'm counsel for GPSA.
The members in the back.
I'm Mary Ann Chris for the graduate residence manager for
Harvard. Mike Wall, University Assembly representative.
And then Nighthawk.
Nighthawk Evanston, graduate student trustee.
And any... I believe that is everyone. So now we shall move on to the approval of minutes for the September GPSA meeting. So we had our first business meeting about a month ago now, and we circulated the minutes earlier today, and those of you already had a recommendation for the amendments. Those are the amendments that were accepted as friendly listed up there. So it is a business meeting, not a voting council meeting. Everyone was actually present at the meeting. Two drinks per person was estimated at about $4,000, not $5,000. Do not send minutes to calendar at cornellgpsa.com, only events. Minutes will not do anything there. The budget motion was not amended to remove the survey, but the survey was to be moved to alternate funding sources. The SAC resource list was not passed by a resolution, it was passed by a motion. Was there any other recommended sources of amendments for the agenda for those who had a chance to look it over? These will be added to the agenda, and if I could get a motion to accept the agenda.
Motion.
Yeah, motion. Sorry, minutes. I keep saying that. It's been a long day. Motion to approve the... We have a motion. We have a second by Chris. So all those in favor, please raise your placard. All right, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. So 16, 4. All those against, please raise your placard. No one against, and those abstaining. So 16, 0 to 1, the motion passes to approve the minutes with the friendly amendments listed above. So moving on, we're going to move into announcements of reports from the committees and external committees and the liaisons. And so the first up is the executive update, and the most recent event that occurred was the Ivy Summit that occurred over the weekend. So we sent a small delegation, which was myself and Chris Heckman. And overall, it focused on a wide-ranging issues across all the different Ivy leagues. And specifically, what we kind of came away with was that there's some Ivy schools that are better off than others just because of the way they're structured and the way that they have funding sources and the way that they approach the administration. So some of the notable points were that some of the grad institutions' safety is becoming an issue, such as Yale, and that's mostly just because of the environment that they are currently in. As a side note, that they actually had, what was the motorcycle gang that's patrolling that? Hell's Angels. So they are patrolling New Haven. So.
That's a good thing, right?
That's apparently a good thing. They replace people with guns with people with chains. So. So the majority of other schools are focused more or less on working on institutional policy and more on social functions. So the entire graduate community initiative that we have pushing and also the work that we did to get involved in the strategic plan last year hasn't really been mirrored in any of our colleague institutions across the campuses. And I think that's a unique function that the TBSA at Cornell is providing so far. Some other notes is that the Cornell TA program is highly developed compared to other schools. So this is like the TA training and the packages that are designed to actually educate students on how to teach students. Cornell's benefit package, surprisingly, is one of the more comprehensive across campuses. And so when other schools are complaining about how they had to start up their own dental plan, at least we have a dental plan that's available to us. And overall, it seems that a wine and cheese tastings are very popular across all schools. So that might be a hint. But that's what they actually pay for. So they buy tickets, so it wouldn't have to be a... Any other things to add?
Yeah, I have a few things that
go right ahead.
So Princeton, Brown, Columbia, Harvard, and MIT all have surveys. The biggest one was MIT surveyed 133 questions with a 40% response rate. Focus groups. They had statistically significant numbers in all fields, which they were happy with and very particularly pointed out. There was a lot of talk about master's programs and relations with master's programs. And it seems like a lot of other schools have much more success than we do in bringing in master's students into their governance structures. A lot of mentions of diversity in all types, which we can talk about later. Graduate Student Center was a really big topic. Wine and cheese, as you had mentioned, but MIT, of course, happy to carry the baton. They said they have a $500,000 budget for orientation alone. The student activity fee is $336 for students. So going right along, I think actually that's probably enough for now. I mean, I can kind of speak to different.
Yeah, we both did elaborate. Time for one or two questions, Ben.
Can we get access to other institution surveys to look at?
I'm sure MIT would be happy.
So
send you a copy.
The surveys haven't
contact that we can get the questions.
The surveys haven't been released, so that it, not publicly, but they will share it amongst the different GPSAs across the colleges.
But the copy of the questions on the survey.
They are actually sharing that. They will.
Yeah.
Does MIT have that?
Any other questions? All right, moving on. That was my executive update. And operations and staffing is next up on the list with the update.
All right, so this slide here shows that the liaison to employee assembly, which I showed at the last meeting. And since then, I have one applicant. And he's going to be approved for that position. And that's one of our own, so Steve. On will be the new liaison to employee assembly, effective now.
Wednesday the first meeting.
Exactly, you heard that. So this slide doesn't apply, but I thought I would, since it just happened recently, I thought I would tell you about the other openings that I have. I don't have slides for them, but I wanted to mention a couple that came to mind that I think are important and wanted to, again, have you as the voting members have a chance to go out and reach out to your field and to your kind of areas. at the next discussion meeting. So we have an opening on the Codes of Judicial Council, or rather committee, which is important for setting the campus code of conduct, and we have currently no representative. We have no representative to the athletics and PE committee, which the university put together, and I think that would be, again, another point where graduate students might be interested. There are openings also on the Student Advisory Library Council, which is a group that is composed of undergraduates and graduate students, and they do meet directly with the university librarian and advise her and the library as projects go on, and there are two openings for that. We also have an opening on the Academic Integrity Committee in the field of biological sciences. And this is a position I would certainly like to fill soon. It is a commitment level that is fairly low, but it does require you to be available in the case of an academic integrity question arising before the committee in your particular field. So you would not be asked to consider questions outside of your field, only that within biological sciences. I think what I want to do is, as I go through my report each one of these meetings, I'm going to try to continue to fill these various committees, but I think those four stand for now as pressing in my mind. Please do feel free to contact me if you know someone or you yourself are interested in one of those vacancies, and we'll get you started. Any questions on that?
Yeah. Did you get somebody for that, Bridget?
Which question?
Bridget's means
restriction. Oh, the ad hoc, I don't know if I'll call it TU means restriction. Yeah. Yes, we have a person appointed.
Okay.
I can pass on that information if you need.
Yeah, I just have another.
Yes, that was another committee.
Anyone else?
That's it from those positions. Thank you.
Do you have another question? Oh, we have one question.
The Codes and Judicial Committee.
Any other questions? All right, we'll be moving on into the committee standing update. So up first is the Ad Hoc Mental Health Committee.
So this was announced at the discussion meeting. I'm meeting. It's going to be this Thursday. It tends to be announced, but I believe it's going to be here in the barn. 5:30 to 6:30, we're meeting with Vice President Susan Murphy to discuss the summer report that discussed means restriction and Cornell's response to the unfortunate incident stuff last year. So it's and policies of interest to you this Thursday, 5:30 here in the barn.
Any questions for Brian? Seeing none, we'll move on. And so up next is the events committee. So in the charter, they're actually required to present a list of events that are occurring over the next semester at the second business meeting of the fall semester. So, Nicole?
So I kind of talked a little bit about to you at the last session meeting. Obviously, like I said, there was the October grad night out. The next big event is the Zombie Club Crawl. Basically, I got all the details today, so the official Facebook invites will go out tonight, and emails start going out probably tonight or tomorrow. If you have your computer open, you can look at CornellGPSA.com. It posted on the blog, the ad. But basically, you're going to six bars, you're going to start at Stella's, go to Pixel, then to Chapter House, and the Chanticleer, and end at Valencia and Felicia. All these bars are going to participate. It's going to be 8 to 1 a.m. on Thursday, October 28th. I don't know if that's going to interfere with any major Halloween party. So, I think we will have a good weekend. then we are working with the Engineering Graduate Student Association to put together an intro to make sure my plan is Engineering Biological Sciences. We're working on locations and funding right now, but the goal is probably mid-November sometime, so keep your eyes closed for that. Also, of course, the November and December grads night out, those are the easy things on the plan, so you'll get updates with the conference board. We have actually moved forward on working on a spa day for the semester. Tentatively, it will be Sunday, December 5th, but that's tentative, pending again funding and municipal issues. But we're in contact with Sarge Torrey, a salon in Cayuga Heights. Also, I mentioned the Fireside Chat with President Gordon. Preston and I are working on getting time to meet with President Gordon to do Fireside Chat here tomorrow with, I guess, tea and coffee and cookies and to put up the possibility of such, but my sense is that this was not as appropriate. Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get a sense of what the voting body thought of that idea, whether or not you guys thought that Scotch as a president would be a good campus-wide event. My guess is no, if I check it, it would be awesome.
Not possible.
Yeah, and technically you're not allowed to throw Scotch bar. Anyway, it'll be coffee and tea. We're trying to be important next time.
Why
is that? We're looking into a bowling night at Hal Newman. Again, date to be announced. And then also a museum event for graduate students and their families, probably at the Physical Science Center and the Department of City are working on every night. So, yeah. So hopefully you guys think this has a good mix of social events. Things might get added depending on what we can actually handle putting together. We're going to be having discussions with them.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
There's one thing earlier
you
talked about.
Yeah, I assumed that was going to be more likely to happen in spring semester. Just given weather. Yeah. Given that deal,
Any other questions or comments?
Anyway,
about
the
call,
I'm really excited about the bar crawl, zombie bar crawl. So you, as core GPSA members, are responsible for helping to drum up ground level enthusiasm for the event. The only way it's going to happen is if people actually get their friends to come and draft up and whatever. So I'm really counting on you guys to help, you know, lead the way with that.
How was the October grad student?
It was good. I mean, for people who came, I mean, it was raining, obviously, so we had kind of cramped the side of the west, but it was definitely packed and busy, and Tim, the owner of the West, he was quite happy with the turnout, so, yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to the committee update portion. Does the communications committee have any updates?
I'll send out an email about this later, but we're going to have our October meeting next Wednesday, 9 a.m.
Any questions or comments for the communications committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to student advocacy committee.
Yes. So today, we have like 2 meetings so far. We had one last Friday, and we're planning to have like 3 meetings by weekly. So what has been like appearing in the committee is overwhelmingly master students and first year students. So it's been very hard to appeal to PhD students in general. So other students are not implemented. So it's hard to appeal to them. Anyway, who are in the PhD, who are in the committee are the ones who kind of set the agenda. And so it is really apparent that we're focusing on first year master students and on incoming students in general, and first year PhD students. So the issue that I've been working on, the first one regards like infrastructure and the fact that some students have felt like they are in a very poor position for PhD with science in general. So they're going to try to like go back to the department and try to talk to and the administration, a faculty member, and team here regarding this issue. Then also the second issue is about classes in general, the fact that a lot of professors are going into sabbatical and are not here to teach the class. So they're replaced by either TA or professors that apparently lack the pedagogic skills that the professors usually have. So that's been an issue that has been coming up a lot and I'm going to try to address. I'm going to have more information about that in 2 weeks, during the next meeting. Then childcare, because I know that the student advocacy committee passed the childcare resolution last semester, so we're trying to see the impact of the resolution, how we have affected the unapplicable community in general. Orientation as well is an issue, meaning that some people in the community found that there are discrepancies across programs for orientation, and there is not a good interface. And so we're trying to see how we can move into that. Last but not least is minority and international students. It is also appearing that students, minority and international students are a big part of Cornell campus. They are not well represented at the assembly or in general in the administration. So in order to remedy that, we have organized a meeting, and that is going to take place on Monday, October 25th, with the head of every student organization, so every student of a student. Now, I got two people to hear in there, and we're going to actually like, have a discussion trying to see what is the condition that can be done, and the recommendation, the complaint about the situation of the next Monday hour. So, and we're still trying to set a date for the time we're meeting with the center. I'll have more information about that because I'm going to see my committee.
Any questions or comments for Ron?
Then? The October 25th meeting, the head of the student club, is that everybody or not with the SAO, or is that?
Actually, first of all, I try to target the minority organizations that are in the graduate school. So it's SAGA, the Latino Coalition, the BGTSA, and the Indigenous Association. Then I also reach out to the one that registered the SAO. So you have the gender education, the church education, the Indian education. Yeah, okay, I need to send out emails to everyone, and then you have a lot of, you know, algebra, like 9 responses.
But it's nothing grad students?
Yeah, it's only grad students.
Okay.
No, only grad students, yes.
Okay. With that, we'll have to keep moving on in the committee update portions. Appropriations Committee.
Well, the Appropriations Committee didn't meet last Thursday, and I had a nice discussion about our role as overseeing and reviewing FPU's procedures and guidelines. We're definitely the vice chair of the feedback people have about their experiences with the FPU in the past, the ideas on how their guidelines have been improved. So please, if you need any feedback that I receive, I'll be happy to forward it to me. I'll really have to say right now.
We have time for one question or comment. Ben?
Can we have a traditional budget update for this group as part of your committee report?
What kind of budget updates would you like?
How much money is distributed? How much do we have?
Okay, never mind.
Thank you.
Moving on to the Ad Hoc Sustainability Committee.
Our group met about a week and a half ago. From our group, there's a bad injury in the curriculum, still left from last semester, and we did some from last year at the bar, which is the principal one. We've also been talking about, you know, the dates for graduate students. There's some possibility of joining forums with the survey that will be we're also exploring the possibility of a tree planting campaign. The Bay Tree Initiative, which is going to be spring. There is also campus-wide sustainability day that's happening this Wednesday on our group by sustainability table. And from the Red Block Initiative, the program is called Swing at Food Grade, so we're going to be seeing that.
All right, thank you. And then moving on to the Finance Commission.
So, Bobby can make it, but the first Tuesday of the month that FC met for the first time, we were being 24 annual request applications and 11 special requests or appeals. $29,000 is allocated, and we have about $92,000 in for the rest of the program.
Any questions or comments? We have time for about one. Yep, Jenny.
Yeah, how often do you approve this?
First Tuesday of every month.
Okay, great.
It's on all of the Tuesdays.
And finally, the liaisons to the other assemblies. So start with Faculty Senate. Do you have any updates?
There's one update about how they are looking into revising the calendar, the academic calendar. Specifically, they are looking into things like expanding the Fulbright potentially. But I don't believe that ad hoc committee from the Faculty Senate has met yet, because I haven't gotten an email about it. So nothing else to report.
We have time for one question or comment for Chris. Seeing none, we'll move on to the second portion of the announcement, well, third portion of the announcement reports, and that is, oh, sorry, I always forget that Nighthawk also serves as our student assembly liaison. Any updates from the student assembly?
There's been some discussion on our blog post about the number of resolutions entertained by the student assembly, so I just wanted to announce that they have run through resolution number 26. take that information however you want. Just a data point to make. I don't think the last several resolutions have related to anything that we're considering. I would suggest, I've heard a lot of discussion about maybe FC revisions this year. The FA was also working this year on revising their FAFC, which is rather differently structured than the GPFAFC, but there will be, I think they're trying to make some changes that may make their institution more like our institution, and I've heard at least some suggestion that there might be a few aspects of their institution that our institution must look into. So I would recommend to the Appropriations Committee, Kyle, Evan, Steve, that you guys, that if there's a possibility for discussing changes with the FAS, but that's pretty much all.
One question, Evan?
Do you know if there, excuse me, if anything has happened on, I think it's Resolution 12, the one on executive compensation? Did that ever come to a vote? Or?
So, that, it came to a vote, and it was passed and was sent to President Scorton. At the last meeting, President Scorton was in attendance this past week, and his response was that he hadn't looked at the resolution itself yet, and so he was giving Crafton and anyone else on the actions list will eventually see the outcome of what happened and the President's one response. But he said that it would be important for him to weigh the benefits of reducing that information transparency versus balancing the privacy issues for those executives involved. So that was all that he said to me.
And with that, I'd ask Nighthawk to switch over to his other role and discuss any trustee updates and feedback.
The only issue that I had is that on October 28th, 29th, and 30th will be the next full meeting of board trustees, which will occur here in Alpha Cut, a meeting in conjunction with the Cornell Council, which is another group of individuals that help serve in advisory capacity to the university and who are heavily engaged in the university through alumni and development activities as well as, mostly alumni development activities. And so during that meeting, we had several committee meetings. One of those was the Student Life Committee, which I sit on, so I'll take the credit, the undergraduate student trustee. And every meeting, either Asa or I are asked to give a presentation on student life issues that are affecting the student body broadly. And it's my turn this time. So I just wanted from you, if any of you have suggestions of major student life issues. So these are non-academic issues that affect the student experience at Cornell. So anything from housing, dining, to whatever, I guess. I ask because I haven't heard any one issue that's come out at GPFA meeting this year. So if you have ideas for that, you can tell me after the meeting. You can send me an email. There's also a blog post up, and you can respond to the blog post on where else you get that.
We have a couple of minutes for any questions or comments that you have for Nighthawk.
Suggestions for if there's any standout issue?
Based on the Ivy League or the Ivy Summit meeting, I wanted to mention that we are the second to the lowest amount of lowest school on how many graduate students we house on campus. So everyone basically more than us other than one school, I think that
was as a proportion.
Yeah. And so I just want to bring up, while that's not something that really has been discussed in these meetings, it is something that we might want to look at in terms of improving the outreach we have to first year students or national students.
I think Chris's point is just apropos, because that has some conversation I'll speak later this week with Vice President Susan Murphy, Student Academic Services, and she's mentioned that she doesn't have a lot of information at this point, but there might be some developments in the housing market here, related to graduate student housing and availability of student housing as well. It's just in terms of whether there would be.
Is that a negative first derivative, or
there's some conversation about what's going to happen with Maplewood in the upcoming five years out or so, and there's also been some conversation about whether there's in the very basic stages about whether the undergraduate student population will be staying at its current cap of bringing 3,160 a year, and if that were to change, what would be the implications for graduate student housing? But other than that conversation, that's the level at which the conversation is, so I understand. It's obviously more part of it.
So we have time for either one more question or comment. Ron?
Yeah, I have a question. I think ever since came to the Border Health in the University Center, he knows me very well. And ever since the question of the screening of the very low number of migrating faculty in the US faculty members, and that information was actually for the board. So I was very interested in the
There's the diversity, the first meeting of diversity against force will also be on the 28th, 29th, and 30th. So, Dean Harris is available.
And with that, we have to move on to the university assembly update. Yes, Evan will be speaking on that.
Hello, I'm Evan Cortez, one of three UA reps, along with Mike Walsh and Ed Strong, who isn't here tonight. The issue I'm going to talk about tonight is child care centers. I'll try and speak quickly to allow time for a little bit of questions. So just to give you a little bit of background, traditionally Cornell didn't have a child care center. We opened one in the fall of 2008. There was a request for proposals that went out in the company that was ultimately hired. It's called Bright Horizons. They're a private corporation founded by a Cornell alum, actually, that runs over 600 centers in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. So they were brought in to oversee things on an administrative level. However, in the first 2 years of this program, so they just finished their second year, beginning their third year, there have been some issues of various kinds. There have been parent complaints about various sorts of things. Talk to me after if you're interested. And most notably, a high rate of teacher turnover and some New York State Child and Family Services violations. Violations is a very strong word, but that encompasses everything. One example that was given at the meeting is a speck of paint on a pillow. I mean, that's not a major issue. The violations can obviously go up more. They can't release that information, but apparently anybody can call Child and Family Services and say, I'd like to know about the violations and get more details. I haven't done that. And even if I had, I couldn't tell you. So in response to these issues, in March 2010, the University Assembly drafted Resolution 18, asking the president to look at severing its contract and looking at other options. The resolution was passed unanimously. HR, who oversees the Cornell Child Care Center, seemed to be on board with this. Around this time, the Faculty Senate passed a similar resolution, and they formed an ad hoc committee to look into these issues over the summer. So in time for the first meeting of the Faculty Senate, which was September 8th, the ad hoc reported back in the form of a 25-page report. It was, shall we say, scathing in its criticism. They highlighted those two main issues that I mentioned already, teacher turnover, which they said is even higher now. It's actually trended upward. And CFS violations, which they say are quite a bit higher. I can show you the tables and show you where the report is, which are higher than other institutions of similar size in the Ithaca area. So in response to that report, the UA passed a resolution, I think it would be resolution one, though there isn't a number on it, calling for Cornell to immediately give notice to Bright Horizons that it wants to terminate its contract, that it call for a new company to fill this beginning January 1st, and that it have in place a new child care provider by August 1st. So, you're up to date. Come to the University Assembly. They've got these documents, and there's a question as to what they should do with it. The University Assembly Child Services, Child and Family Services Subcommittee drafted a resolution that said basically something to the effect of, we ask the President to look at these recommendations that the Faculty Senate has made and then do something about them. So, fairly, no offense, fairly lukewarm language. Not particularly in favor or particularly against. There was a number of vehement debates at the meeting this past Wednesday. A lot of parents attended. In fact, it had to be moved to the memorial room. There was so much larger attendance. To sort of summarize the parental feedback, a lot of people were very much not impressed with the Faculty Senate resolution. They didn't approve of closing down the center. They wanted it to stay open. Excuse me, I misspoke. They didn't approve of getting rid of Bright Horizons as the contractor. They wanted to follow through the contract and see how things went. The difficulty here is that we're not sure whether they were hinted at whether or not the center would be closing. So my point would be that no matter what we do, we need to emphasize that this center cannot close, even temporarily, to throw grad students, faculty, and staff into the lurch. This is, Mike mentioned to me, this is an important area for the UA because we would seem to have an issue where different constituencies, grad students, staff on one hand, faculty on the other, have seemingly different interests. I mean, we're all in favor of good care for our children, but how that is obtained varies. So finally, the UA has formed an unofficial sort of committee, which I'm on, to draft resolution language. There's a lot of disagreement, some very tough emails going back and forth. It's looking like the committee won't be able to draft one resolution, but will instead draft two. One which says basically, sever the contract immediately, it's like the Faculty Senate has said, and the other one that says, no, we shouldn't do that. So that's what we'll be going into next Wednesday.
We have time for one or two questions.
My understanding of the Faculty Senate resolution is provide notice to Bright Horizons that the contract will be ended at the contract turnover period we negotiated after 2 years.
That,
not an immediate end.
There are two different Faculty Senate resolutions. There's one from the past year, I think March-ish, that says that. The most recent one from the September meeting says terminate, issue of termination immediately.
So you said that we're looking at just to ensure that there is child care, especially for graduate students, should their contract be terminated, and you're making sure that the center doesn't close. What happens if another company does come in? Is it within the UA to look at the current children that are there? Would they continue to be serviced at the same rate or something like that? What happens if there's turnover?
You know, I don't know. My guess would be that they would negotiate a contract with a new provider that would provide a similar level of service at a similar rate while fixing the issue.
Would that be something to include in one of those resolutions?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Because I agree with you precisely. The resolution language tends to be vague. It tends to say, we've got problems, we need to get rid of the current provider. It doesn't say, and we need to ensure that, yeah, because this is the sort of number one issue here in this debate, and why it's been so passionate is that people are afraid that the center might close, even for a week. That's a major issue.
But you bring up closing, but I think you also need to take into account what happens when you
turn on the center. Yeah.
We have time for one more question or comment.
My understanding from when this came up last year with the Student Advocacy Committee was that a primary concern for graduate students was the expense of child care.
Yes.
And child care funding is a key issue. So I would hope that the graduate voice conveyed in any of these discussions is that we're concerned that faculty are subsidized at a significantly higher rate than graduate students are.
I can give you some numbers if you like.
I know there are a lot more. So I just think that the graduate voice needs to be our primary concern.
I agree.
Is good, cost affordable health care for graduate and professional students.
I agree 100%. I think that we can have the best child care center in the world, and if graduate students can't afford to send their children there, then it doesn't matter to us at least. Just to give you some numbers, the cost ranges from $13.50 a month for 5 days a week and an infant rate, $3.27 a month. The largest amount that a graduate student can get is $1,500. The largest amount that a staff or faculty member can get is $5,000. I've been talking to Brendan Marston, who's the chair of the subcommittee on this, to make sure that, yes, that the accessibility is the number one graduate student issue, as our Resolution 2 from last year says.
Could you
give me
those numbers again?
Not
the 1,500. I can give them to you later. I've got a little chart.
And with that, any other questions or comments? I would be happy to take them after the meeting. And we're going to have to move on to business of the day. And so we're going to have to call on Evan once again. The business of the day today is Resolution 2. We are going to be discussing the creation and funding of an ad hoc survey committee. And so today we're actually just discussing it. We're not planning to vote on it. So it's just to provide the writers of this resolution feedback. However, if we do feel comfortable in voting on it, we could, because it's not a charter one. It doesn't require multiple meetings. But this is primarily served so that we can write up the best resolution possible in this regard. And the PowerPoint's acting slow, but so that's the agenda. Take away, Evan.
Hi, I'm Evan Cortin. So, to talk about a different resolution, too, the resolution 2 for this year. We're not quite at 26, but 2, hey, that's not bad. So, to give you again a little bit of history, last year, the setting of the activity fee, passionate debate. I seem to specialize in talking about passionate debate. However, I was present for the end of this. I know many of you were present for the whole thing. The basic issue was that a lot of people felt that things were important, but didn't have more than anecdotal data to suggest that. So one of the big issues was Slope Day versus Cornell Cinema. Different people had different thoughts, but we didn't have any good sense of what graduate students wanted. Do they go to Slope Day? Do they go to Cornell Cinema? You know, what's a priority for them? So in response to that, an ad hoc committee was created last year. Mike Denkin, who's graciously joined us, took the lead on that. They drafted Resolution 18, and this was passed 12-1-2, and this basically called for, among other things, that this GPSA, those of us sitting in this room, allocate $2,940 from our internal budget to fund a survey. So, as you know, when we passed the internal budget a couple of weeks ago, we did not allocate $2,940. However, and this was relates to Ben's amendment of the minutes, we did say in that meeting that we wanted to pursue a survey. We wanted to make sure to fund a survey. So I've appointed myself, basically the sort of lead person on this. I've drafted the resolution language. I'm here to talk to you about it. So you should have in front of you a double-sided sheet of paper with the most up-to-date text of Resolution 2 on it. My thanks to Chris Clark, Mike Walsh, Ben Hebner, and the Executive Committee for their helpful feedback and helping me to flush some things out here. I think we can all agree to state in the broadest possible terms that a survey is a good idea. I think that's not controversial. The area of controversy I have here, however, not surprisingly, the devil's in the details. It says in my text. How much money should we spend? How exactly should we conduct this? What sort of questions should we ask? These are the important issues. So to sort of lay out, obviously there's a wide variety of ways that we can do this, but to lay out two rather different ways of conducting this, just to sort of get the debate started. One is to do what Mike Genkin has already worked on. The Survey Research Institute at Cornell, I did meet with their director last week, would construct a random sample of 1,000 graduate professional students. What they would then do is they'd send out the survey to them, they'd watch the response rate. Mike, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
they keep an eye on this response rate, and if it was insufficiently high, I think the target was 60%, they would then pay for conversion. They would offer financial incentives in the form of, I think it was Amazon gift cards, to those non-respondents to get that response rate up to 60%. So there's that method. Another possible method, again, just to get the debate started, is to do something like use, say, the CIT. Oh, I should back up. I should clarify. So that total amount, $2,940, breaks down two ways. $940 of that is fixed. That goes to the Survey Research Institute to use their terminology, to program the instrument. I don't know what that means. It sounds expensive. So that amount depends on the number of questions, but it doesn't depend on the number of people surveyed. I think this quote is for 35 questions. Mike's nodding. So that 940 is fixed. Of the 2,000, this would depend on the response rate. If we got a very low response rate the first time around, we'd have to spend more money to bump that response rate. If we got 60% or higher the first time around, no money would have to be spent. It would just be that 940. So another possible option, just to lay this out there for you, I'm presenting this in neutral fashion, would be to conduct the survey ourselves. There are a couple of different ways we can do this. One way is CIT provides Qualtrics, which is good high-tech, I'm a music major.
Survey.
Yeah, it's one of those instruments. Yeah. I'm not going to be programming the instrument, don't worry. I play the instrument. So this software is free. I've already been in communication with them. They say it can handle anything from surveying a smaller group of students all the way up to the entire student body. I think the way it works is it allows you to put in NetIDs for everybody and send them a personalized email so it can make sure that people don't fill the survey out more than once. They said normally the limit is 6,000, but they would bump it up for us if we wanted to survey everybody. So that would be free. However, probably a good idea is to provide some financial incentives. Perhaps something like enter your name and you'll be entered into a random draw. We could spend whatever we wanted. $10, $20 Amazon gift cards, that's $200. Other options would include, say, something like SurveyMonkey. To do the package that we need, that would be a $200 cost as opposed to the free from Qualtrics. A final option, just to throw it out there, would be to, get down and dirty with PHP and MySQL and write it ourselves. That wouldn't be fun. this is the end of my prepared remarks. Mike Enkin is here to help answer questions. I'm here to help answer questions. I think our three big issues are basically the implementation method, SRI versus Qualtrics versus SurveyMonkey versus, clipboards and pens, I don't know, to sample or not to sample. Basically, do we construct a randomized sample or a representative sample to grad students and do them? The benefit being that it's much easier to get a higher response rate because you've got fewer people that you're asking to begin with. Or do we do a census sample? Do we send it out to everybody and basically cross our fingers, offer incentives, do a lot of marketing, offer lots of time, but hope for a higher response rate? To give you some background, by the way, we conducted a survey in 2005. It was done that way. We got a 40%, I'm rounding, 40% response rate among graduate students. 40% across the board, 60% among graduate students, so lower among professional students. That was about 2,500 respondents. 8% of them, by the way, have kids. Just to throw that in there. Finally, the budget. I would recommend, we're not in any particular hurry, that we not vote on the resolution today, but if we were to vote on the resolution, you'll note that I said, allocate dollar figure. This is just the idea here, and this is the main reason that we discussed this, is that we get a sense of what the GPSA, what we in this room think is appropriate to spend on this survey. Do we want to spend $3,000? Do we want to spend $500? Do we want to spend somewhere in between? I did talk to some people. They said, we think that you should leave the budget off for now, create the ad hoc, talk about it. My response was basically, we should put our money where our mouths are. The plural works there. I think it's appropriate that we say, we want to fund this. We think it's important up front. Otherwise, what's you know, we risk wasting the time of ad hoc committee members. They get together, they do a lot of work, they come before the body, and the body says, actually, we don't want funding. So I think it's important to do that up front. Anyhow, thus ends my prepared statement.
And with that, because we are not intending to vote on this, we're going to enter into informal debate. The way informal debate today is going to be working is that raise your hand, and I will record the order that I see people's hands raised in, and you'll have about 30 seconds to add a question or comment, and then there'll be about a minute response. And we will try to move quickly here because we have about 11 minutes for a discussion at this point. And we will begin. So Asha's first.
So, from your description, it sounded like the survey people and the CIT option were very comparable, but there's a huge difference in price, zero versus 2,000. So could you outline what the benefits of going with the survey
with the SRI option?
With the SRI option?
Maybe specify, send that question over to Mike.
So I think people's discussion was saying that one of the key elements in terms of doing any survey is the response rate. The reason the response rate is important is because if it turns out that the non-responders are different than the responders, they cannot generalize the population, basically the numbers are arbitrary. Now, there are a number of benefits to going with SRI. The first kind of benefit is, I don't know who's actually volunteering to do this survey interface. Doing a survey requires a lot of time and a lot of sort of commitment. It's not as simple as program of one. There's a lot of sort of just like full transaction costs or in terms of implementing it. So it's not something that a graduate, that's easy for a graduate student to use. The survey committee is volunteering to do the analysis of the, we can write the questions. We're actually saving money because we're volunteering to write the questions. Normally that's where I charge money for that. But the idea is, one of the things that it gets you is there's an actual plan to get moving as far as actually making the survey. And the second element of how it impacts the response rate directly, one of the key things that impacts the response rate, is credibility. If you get a survey from somebody from a source you're not sure of, you sort of are ambiguous about, you may not answer the question. The advantage of SRI is it provides credibility. You get
to keep the discussion moving on, we're going to have to go to the next question, unless does the council want to hear the finishing of the statement?
I'd like to hear the finishing of the statement.
Alright, well, continue on.
So, the argument is that if you get it from SRI, you're more likely to increase that response rate, because it's a credible kind of source. So response rate is something critical for us, then we should go with sort of the professional there. There's also a third issue, which is privacy. Privacy and accuracy, I would say. So if you go with things like SurveyMonkey, it blocks MAC addresses from computers that answer the survey. And I think with SRI, there's sort of a slightly better system to ensure that people don't respond multiple times, because it goes without a need to respond to computers. Another thing, the issue of privacy is sort of ensures that information is deleted because of people's student. Now, I'm not saying, I don't know if he's going to actually be in charge of programming and implementing this, but I think people will have more confidence in answering the survey truthfully if it's done by a professional survey process. I believe that they're not necessarily
trusting. With that, Brian has the next question.
Two quick comments. First one is, your second method was the way you enter in the net IDs. How would that be done for our population? How do we get all the net IDs and how do we get them? Second thing, just because I noticed on the slide, say implementation ends, it deals indirectly with your resolution, but something to think about would be, out of all of the graduate students, is there a specific target population that you would be looking at within the graduate population? Would you be, for example, are you interested in 5th and 6th year grad students, their responses versus someone who's been here 1 or 2 years?
So the first question, the answer is honestly, I don't know. I've emailed with Qualtrics, the Qualtrics support folks, tentatively to get it to get a sense of whether or not they can do it with this large, with a full population, they say yes. I haven't yet gotten in touch with people at the grad school or people at the Office of Assemblies to talk about obtaining, whether it's feasible to obtain a whole list of Gannett IDs or not. My guess is it must be possible in some way or else the Survey Research Institute couldn't do it. Again, I don't personally want a list of 6,500 Gannett IDs in my computer. I mean, I'm not interested in that privacy burden. I would rather there was some way that they could interface directly, similar to what Qualtrics, or to what the SRI would do. Target population, my personal feeling with this, Mike and I have exchanged many thousand word emails on this, and we come at it a slightly different way. I think it's important that we do, in effect, a presidential election, that we send out a survey that's available to the entire population, and, you know, we allow lots of time, a month, 6 weeks, we send reminders, and we offer financial incentives to encourage a response rate with the hopes of getting it as high as we possibly can. So my target population is everybody. And then when we get the results back, we have to be very careful to say, as they did in the 2005 survey, 40% response rate there, this is representative of survey respondents. My thought there, again, is one of our main issues is the activity fee. If we're concerned, well, we'll be saying we want to hear your thoughts on how to spend your activity fee. If that's not enough to get you to respond, then the inference, and again, I'm no statistician, is that you probably don't have strong thoughts on how your activity fee is spent.
Next up is Billy.
It was administered by SRI. I don't think we know exactly how much it cost. Mike Walsh didn't remember a figure. I think it was 3,000-ish. We don't have the data from that. How long it is, I can send you the PDF or point you to a link with the whole survey, the results, the list of all the questions and all of that. It was 30, 40 questions.
Next up is Jen.
I don't know if you guys have listened to this, I'm sure you have, because you guys have done a very thorough job thus far, but...
My training's amazing.
But is there any information that's already out there that has been collected by the university, by the different entities at the university that could be provided to us, and, you know, as far as graduate versus undergraduate usage of these facilities?
That's a great question. Certainly one area we talked about last year was getting Cornell Cinema to track the number of people coming in, how many grads, how many undergrads. Another thing to look at would be Slope Day. Well, in order to get into Slope Day, you need to scan an ID card. Might we be able to get that information? The difficulty there is that we don't know. I went to Slope Day last year for 25 minutes. Somebody else may have gone for 6 hours. We both swiped in. So that's a question there. We wouldn't be doing a survey to find out demographic data. We can get that from the graduate school, so we can take that off the table. As far as student life, I think we've sent an email to Brenda Wicks. I don't know if we have any information there. I emailed Ari. He said to talk to somebody who's actually on the employee assembly, coincidentally, who works with surveying students. So before we would send anything out, we would make sure that we're not engaging in any duplication.
All right, next up is Chris.
Mike and Emily, great job. I was on those board emails as well. I think that the two things, one thing that we really want to work on, that I'll be about as well, is we want to try to go to the entire population and look for a response rate, or we want to go for a sample and sample size factor, you're a little familiar with it. There's 702 grad professional students. We randomly sample at a reasonably low margin of error, high confidence interval. You'll need 364 people in our sample to be able, in general, to be able to say with some degree of confidence what the true population average is for people like that. So, in other words, for example, if we do the, that's a random selection. If we do the, if we email everyone, I have some experience with checkbox, what SRI uses, my response rate is low. And everyone essentially can get the email that gets sent back to you. So I think one thing
definitely think about echo years. I kind of like the whole population, so I think you're able to have a shot in the conducting something kind of like that. They can't do it with the presidential election, you can't survey every voter, so they randomly dial numbers until they get to 1,000 of those numbers. For us, the 1,600 or 2, it might be worth a shot to try to do the census. And then you risk a low response rate. We do have the rest of the probably give us some demographic data and other data to compare our sample with, so we can determine the extent of which we have not at the end of the sample, but it might be worthwhile to have the opportunity to do a census and see how many we can get. Yeah, that seems if you want to stratify by grad or professional student, roughly about two-thirds grad, one-third professional, your sample size differs, and the aggregate that can go up. If you stratify by college for humanities, social sciences, your sample size would go up as well.
Is there a question, or do you just want a general response?
No, it's not just a question, just okay. Something that I think we should consider. Would be, the biggest thing would be the sample.
Can I respond anyway?
30 seconds to respond.
I think that sort of the issue with stratifying is a big one. The question is, I don't think we necessarily know what makes somebody representative. Do they go to the cinema because they're in the humanities, or do they go because they like movies? I mean, we just can't tell that, even if we have a representative sample. The other issue, I think the presidential election, again, I'm not a statistician, I'm a musician, but the presidential election makes sense to me. When you're doing a poll, you know, you can't call 200 million registered voters, but you can sample 1,000. We do have the technical ability to survey 6,700 students.
All right, and the last three people with questions is Chris H., Ben, and Nicole. So Chris, you're up first.
My very basic knowledge and statistics says, though, that if you try to get everyone, then you will have people that are most interested that are responding, and even if you try to bring the rate up, it still won't be as much as the amount you could get if you had a larger incentive. So, you know, like, we ask for less people, we could even bump the incentive up more so that, you know, like, at the end, we're giving away, you know, like, $30 rather than $5. But besides that, I mean, I love this discussion that's going on, but I think that a lot of this should probably be relegated to a committee. You know, our basic sense, it seems like, is that a lot of people are interested in the survey, we're willing to spend money on a survey based on the amount of money that we've saved from previous years. I think from that, this body should be able to just say, okay, you know, survey committee, do your thing, decide amongst yourselves what you want, make a good case for it, and we'll probably go along with it and present at the end. So, you know, I think that's a more productive way to use our time in the future, besides maybe if other people have questions about what will go on the survey, suggestions along those lines, what would be helpful for the committees or whatnot. And that's not a question, that's just a general statement.
I think budget is the main issue. I don't know if we would have 5 seconds at the end to do a sort of quick, I would be willing to fund the survey at X dollar figure so that we know what sort of number to put in there. Again, as you know, that changes our options. If the people in this room say $500, that takes the SRI off the table. If the people in this room say $3,000, then we have the SRI option that Mike has discussed on the table.
Moving on, it's Ben.
My sort of general comment as well. I'm a little nervous about the idea of this body generating questions or approving questions. Just if I've learned anything from reading 538, it's that it's very easy to do a bad survey. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'd be interesting to get some professional help of how to generate some general ideas we want information on, and then have professional survey experts develop a way to get the information that's useful for this body. Because I don't want to spend any money on a bad survey, but I don't mind spending quite a bit of money on a good survey. I think Chris's point that it's not our job to design the survey is a very good one. I don't think that's an effective use of our time. I think it's better for us to come up with what issues we want to talk about and then have somebody professionally design the survey. I think thinking of it in terms of how much are we willing to pay per person might be a better way to see what the total budget would be.
I agree with Ben only because I too second the notion that I need professional help.
And Nicole with the final comment or question.
Well, I guess I was going to make plus for Qualtrics. I used to work in a business school for economists. We use it all the time. It's actually pretty easy. If if you're going to do your own analysis and write your own questions, programming Qualtrics is actually pretty straightforward. And it does allow you to send out emails with individual private links to the surveying, I guess. And so you can track when they completed it, when they looked at it, like when they first clicked up, they opened the email, when they click on the link, things like that. So you can keep tabs very easily on who's taking or looking at your survey. If you decide to go the route of not even writing your own questions, obviously this is like a good point, but to me, writing, once you've written questions, is very easy to catch. I love that.
And with that, we're going to have to close the discussion down and move on in the agenda. So this is a conversation that is pretty active on the forum. So if you have any other ideas or comments, I believe Evan would love to hear them on the forum. And especially with regard to budget, to see how much money you actually want to spend. And so we will be moving on in the agenda. And please see him after if you have any other comments or questions. So we are not voting on this currently because I do not have the sense that we had a completed resolution. So we will be moving on. So next up is more of the resolution posting, strategic plan, and administrative update. So up first is Tom, and he'll be talking about the GBSA charter review timeline.
Okay, so at the last meeting of the discussion, at the last discussion meeting, I announced this, so I'm going to do it again for benefit everyone here. We're going to have our first meeting of this group that will review charter review, and we'll do the charter review on Monday, November 8th, here at the Big Red Barn from 5:30 to 7 o'clock, and I've been in touch with Chris Corda, the manager of the Big Red Barn, to allocate us a space for that meeting, as well as space for the meeting on December 6th, which will be the second meeting of this group, and it will again be 5:30 to 7 at the Big Red Barn. I've not been able to lock down a February date as of yet, so it remains to be determined. The timeline is something that's important enough to note here because it does affect kind of our long-term plan here. As a group, I want to try to get this resolution circulated to this body on February 21st, which is our second business meeting of that semester. And again, it would be circulated on March 7th to discussion members, members at the discussion meeting, and that at both meetings there would be a significant time for conversation. So I'm also putting this out there, like if you have your town hall meeting, if you have other things you want to bring up for resolutions, be warned, this will take up probably most of our meeting on the 21st and probably also the 14th. Charter review is as contentious, or if not more contentious, anything we've discussed so far this year. And we're going to need a lot of time at both those meetings if we want to have a chance of passing it. The reason we need to do it at that time is because the next meeting, April 4th, would be a time where we'd be electing people to seats. And then on April 18th, we would be electing people to officer positions. And that's the last meeting of the year. Like all of a sudden, boom, you're done. So we kind of need to get this done by March. So I'm just saying that now. And, you know, as the person who is charged to lead this, if by March 14th we do not have a resolution passed, I'm not comfortable, personally, I'm saying now, pushing this to April. I would rather let the old charter stand. So I want to get this on the table now, but this is our timeline. And I really now want to encourage, next slide, I think I have it in there, all people to help and participate in this activity. So this is something, again, I said in the last meeting, I'm going to review it again. The operations and staffing committee, myself, the chair, and the other standing committee chairs, and a couple ex officio people, are required to review the charter, okay, this year. But we're also allowed to open this meeting to all members of our community. So that's why I'm saying everyone can come to the meeting. It really, we love it. But the voting members shall only be those persons in standing committees. So that is to say, when the committee does its business and approves an actual charter, only five people vote on that. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. And that's it. And once that vote is made, that charter then goes to this body. So everyone here will vote on the charter, but you won't get a chance to vote on it as being formed, as we currently have are supposed to operate by our own bylaws. So this is how I read it. However, for those standing committee chairs, please note that you may appoint someone from your committee. So if you're a member of a committee, which is standing, only standing committees, then you may ask your chair to serve in that voting capacities. If you have a real desire, I would encourage that to be sort of negotiated, but it needs to be one person from those committees at each meeting. Now, since I have just a couple minutes, I wanted to take this time to just kind of like raise a question or two to the body, and maybe just, I know we have not that much time, but first thing is, who was here, show of hands, who was here last year during the presentation of charter changes, R17 and 16? Okay. All right. So I want to hear from some of the new people as well as some of those people. So who was not here for any of this last year? Okay, just a couple. We're talking about changing the entire kind of position of the GPSA, its entire structure, the way members are considered, the kinds of executive offices that exist, and the kinds of committees that exist. So I'm gonna have two questions that I want to hear from both groups discreetly. So if you see him from the second group, please. Okay, so again, let's start it this way. For those people in the second group, that was the people who were not here in any way, as we discussed things, and as you come here, what I want to know is by what route you came to be at this meeting, okay? That is to say, trace for us a little bit, you know, not too long, kind of like how you got involved with your field organization, maybe someone who's a voting member told you to come, maybe your forum, whatever group you're from has a way to elect you. And then maybe we could do the same answer for some of the people who have been involved in GPSA. So would people be willing to talk about that for 30 seconds? Just maybe a couple people. Love to hear it. Yeah, go ahead.
So this is Lee. I'm a professional student in the MFA program, and one of the members who, I think she was previously involved in GPSA, they're not positive, sent out an email and asked if she has any of the phone. First year students were interested, so I then contacted Chris Heffman, who I knew was involved in this, and said, why don't you come? So I came.
Okay, now how about someone who's a returner? Think back to when you got involved. Someone along here?
My department is College of Evolutionary Biology, and I became our field representative. We have a graduate student meeting once a semester. Everyone in the department is about graduate students. So we have a bunch of committees in our department staff. We position graduate student representatives in one of them, so I volunteered for that position.
I was kind of similar. I drew the short straw because nobody wanted to be the field rep for my PE field my first year. So I was a non-voting member of the Council of Representatives the first year. I was frustrated because I couldn't be more active. Then my second year became a voting member and physical sciences rep because there were not a lot of people running physical sciences reps that year. So sort of did a three-year process of involvement in my department and then as a non-voting member and then as a voting member.
Okay, thank you. So the second question, this is one, it's again, informal survey. Please raise your hand if the level of involvement that you have to GPSA is at your desired level or below your desired level. So I'd say below or so either you want to be more involved or you are currently in a state that you feel is a good level of involvement.
I think I'm too.
Okay. Next question. Okay, one, two, three, four. How many people feel they are overly committed to the GPSA at this time, that they feel like they're wearing too many hats and getting a lot? Okay, that's all I want to know for now. Thank you.
All right.
That was anonymous, right?
So up next we have Ed. So if you have any questions or comments about the charter review process, please see Tom afterwards, and he's going to be soliciting feedback through the rest of the semester as we go through and overhaul this document, or if you choose just to keep what we already have. So up next we have Brenda. She wanted to address us about some administrative concerns and some updates that she has.
Let's go with some of what you guys have already discussed. The grad student satisfaction survey administered by the graduate school was last conducted in 08. I shared last year with the folks involved last year, the content and the data from that. We got a pretty good response rate. I think it was almost 40%, which was, I guess, a little bit higher than what should have been expected, how it was phrased to me. But the questions on that survey are a little bit different than what I've heard vocalized to your interest. Right now, Chris Porta and Leslie, what's her name last name? Statler Meyerhoff, who has worked with Campus Life for a number of years, are doing a survey and focus group around graduate students' perceptions and use of on-campus dining facilities. That segues into current and future use of the barn. As some of you may remember, a few years ago in the winter time, the barn was closed because the roof was falling in and presented danger to people in the barn. They at that point fixed the roof. It's good for 20 to 30 years, and then about a year later, someone came up and said, well, the roof is good for 20 to 30 years, but we don't know about the walls. because it's outside the scope of the original assessment. So at this point, the university is asking us, and Assistant Provost / Dean Newt and Susan Murphy are once again requesting input on the current and future barn. Now, I know last year the GPSA passed a resolution saying we want to contribute money or we want there to be a fund drive, or I can't remember what it was called. But anyway, there was a resolution about the barn being maintained as a graduate student center. I would like to request volunteers, and I don't know whether you want to do that through the GPS committee structure or how I can tap into the discussion around the table. Those of you who are not as active or as interested as want to be in GPSA, just sort of an update of GPSA's take, opinion on the barn and the need or need of student center. I missed the IB Summit update, and Chris is not back yet, but we did do some polling, a little informal surveying, nothing of the technology that you guys have been talking about, with our colleagues at the other universities in attendance at the IB Summit to get sort of benchmarks, what other universities offer as far as graduate student centers, and services that either operate in those centers or affiliated with those centers. We're going to get computer benchmarking, and I just need a little information update. And I can certainly put in my 2 cents. We need a bigger data. The farm is wonderful. It's just still an addition. Right now, they're not asking where we're going to get the money from. They're just asking what our desire or design would be. Yeah. That is progress, and it was something that was in the original GCI document in different ways. So I'm very glad about that. Also, with the ad hoc mental health committee, I missed that report as well.
Thursday.
It's Thursday, right?
There you go. That's the report.
Okay. The graduate school has been asked to participate for the first time with the deans and directors around the issue of student well-being. And I guess it's something that's going to go back to the Faculty Senate, suggestions, requests for promotion of graduate special student health and well-being on the campus. Some of you may remember that I did sort of an ad hoc survey at CGIS last year. And they got candy, saying it's really easy if they're in front of you, you just give them candy and they'll talk. More people's suggestions or input on ideas. I think I'll probably do something equally as scientific this year to solicit more input. If you guys, as part of either the health and well-being, the mental health subcommittee, or the GPSA in general, would like to provide some input on that, certainly I would welcome that as well. And then the other leg of graduate student life that I'm working on is careers in professional development. And I don't know. Actually, if I hear the word pleasure cut one more time, it's not going to be pleasant. But anyway, we are in the process of evaluating those professional development vis-a-vis fields for future faculty, as well as support services for grad and professional students who are seeking employment alternatives outside of the academy. And we're doing that on university-wide, so all of the college career services offices are participating, as well as field-based from the graduate school perspective. And certainly any student input on that would be most.
So we have time for about one or two questions or comments for Brendan. Ben?
Are you content with the existing structures to get you the kind of feedback? We just get a lot of issues and wanted our input. Are there good conduits for that exchange of information, or do we need to still have a different way to have those conversations?
Well, the mental health one I was going to take to the mental health committee on Thursday and see what the committee. Generally, my working relationship with GPSA for the past 4 years or whatever has been, I come to you guys and ask for opinion, then you tell me how you want to give it to me. Is that the best I can do? I'm sure there are other ways to do it.
Are you satisfied with the way that the GPSA has been giving you its opinion? Would it be useful to the grad students to have a small, or the grad life office have a small working group of people to have focus group discussions, or do you want to address the entire body, or do you want a resolution from us, or?
The more input that I can have, seriously, the more I can reflect to the administration what the graduate student perspective is, the more I feel contented that I'm doing my job the way that I want to. I can certainly, generalize from my 15 years of working with graduate students what I see as overarching and some of the history and stuff. If there wants to be a new GPSA committee that serves as an advisory focus group,
or do you want to get together and have lunch here every Thursday and talk about it?
Very cool. You're being far more creative than I've been in the past, and I'd love to.
Okay.
I
will be glad to start a discussion on the forum of how best to do that.
We have time for one more question or comment.
Lunch sounds great.
So I think Brenda will be willing to stick around for a couple more minutes until the end of the meeting. And if you have any questions or comments, please go up and see your expert. So with that, we end our official portion and we move into open forum. And we have about 7 minutes left for open forum. So the first person who requested was Grant, and she would like to address Buddy.
So as you know, the GPSA agenda recognition of minority international students. I think there's a lot of complaint about the fact that it was ready to reach out to minority students and international students, and that was involved in the entire process and the environment in general. So my idea is to open a community at the GPSA for the four American minority education which I'm going to begin in Saga. I'm not going to say that.
Asian American graduate
application. Latino coalition, the indigenous association, and the black international association. So I was thinking about the about that. If you could assign directly like a GPS representative position to the organization, we will make sure and ensure that there is a representation of the group within that campaign.
GPSA has both discussion and business meetings once a month, as we all know. And at those meetings, we welcome graduate students from all groups. The reason I preface that is that's the best answer I can say at this point. The charter, though, can be amended in many ways, and it can be amended in ways that we haven't even conceived of. This might be a way to consider. Our bylaws, I should also point out, now require us to consider any changes in an off year during this process, and that any changes during the activity fee year be addressed through the operations and staffing committee, which you're a member. So you'll definitely have a voice in this discussion as we go forward. But I wanted to get on the table what I see as the parliamentarian or sort of charter answers.
Well, no, I think it's wonderful that the staff is reviewing the charter, that I think we can actually address the issue, and I'll be part of the meeting which we're organizing, and because then again, it's true that the meetings are open to everyone, but if you know the peer community, sure, the people who actually take the time to come, and even the peer community are not usually always present, you know, in the country. So by finding a position, at least the GPSA will show you the fact that it is really, really important to reach out to everyone and have a voice.
Any other responses? Yes, yes. Would you like one seat or four, the four seats for each? For each, for each
four? I think a seat for each.
Each of the members.
Yes.
These would be non-voting.
The thing is that I would feel about that. I need to defend that. Because it's true that, well, as a chairman, you don't really have much of a say. You know, you just are the intermediary, and I think it's great. I think it's, you know, but sometimes it seems we are more interested in the voting position. Now I don't know how to defend that. I don't want to get to it, you know? So,
well, I mean, so I think that's a good idea to have the four groups, but one way to do it would be to have four field type level positions and then one voting position for the four. So,
yeah, so we're thinking about that two or 15 ones, but sometimes do you think would be fair, you know?
So, with this discussion, I think it's moved into specifics. I think she's just trying to get the overall feeling. Any of these specifics will be addressed during the Charter Review Committee itself.
Okay.
Silly?
Groups that are organic, you know? So yes, I think we need an urgent need, and it's not being addressed at all.
Have the four groups you mentioned, have they expressed?
Of course, yes. I think we also, like, choose, you know, this meeting. I mean, it's a meeting with the person of the institution and the vice president to talk about that. They only, you know, when you're involved already in an organization, it's going to show that you're using leadership in your environment and your voice in your university. So, they don't even, like, I talk to some of them, of course, that I know, they're not even aware that about other GPA, for example, you know? They're not aware that they have say, they're not aware that it's open to public, you know? So, yes, I think that's it.
This will be a pretty nice discussion in the Charter Review Committee and also the body as a whole. With that, we'll probably have to move on to any other open forum issues. Chris?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm also a member of the General Committee of the Graduate School, and I wanted to mention one thing that was briefly talked about since it didn't really fit in anywhere else in the agenda. There is some talk that at the matriculation of a new graduate student that they will have to acknowledge the integrity code. This was something that was also put through in the Faculty Senate for the undergraduates, so the undergraduate graduate students. And so this might come in the form of an acknowledgement, like checkbox or something when they're matriculating. If there are any specific opinions or emotions on that issue, then please come to me and let me know.
So
something
put forward
is
a primary plan for orientation next fall.
And then with that, I believe Brian had one item he'd like to bring up in the next minute.
So in SA Resolution 500, I actually don't remember the number.
I think it's 22.
Okay, I'll take the word. There was a resolution passed that said that students would carry pepper spray. And I want to say, now, there is some talk in the blog about when they say students, do they refer to undergrads or do they refer to one else students, which we are. And I was curious what people thought about that resolution, about allowing you to carry pepper spray on campus. What? Still not allowed.
Didn't the head of Cornell Police weigh in and say something like it might make people less safe?
Yes, that's like Kathy's owner expressed that in a song article. You can get on that song article.
Right. But eventually this goes to the administration, but I'm curious what the GPSA thought about that.
Right. Yeah. What if the GPSA's, I don't remember how we review resolutions of other assemblies. Isn't there a clause that we have some amount of time to respond to other resolutions or something?
Yes, it's in the charter. I'll have to review. I can solve my parliamentarian.
The SA sense is not a lot of resolutions like that. The students do this, students do that, or they will dictate that the student activity group or organization recognizes student organizations this way or that way. And I'm really becoming increasingly uncomfortable with the way the SA talks about all students.
So to jump in here, we have hit 90 minutes, so that concludes. There should be a motion on the floor to amend. Do I have to either extend the time period or else to actually
motion to adjourn?
Thank you. And with that, we have adjourned. You can still sit around and talk if you like. Please consult the people who requested feedback.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.